The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Jesus entered the synagogue. There was a man there who had a withered hand. They watched Jesus closely to see if he would cure him on the Sabbath so that they might accuse him. He said to the man with the withered hand, "Come up here before us." Then he said to the Pharisees, "Is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath rather than to do evil, to save life rather than to destroy it?" But they remained silent. Looking around at them with anger and grieved at their hardness of heart, Jesus said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately took counsel with the Herodians against him to put him to death. The Gospel of the Lord. Good, so once again, good morning, brothers and sisters. A couple little stories this morning of victory against all odds. First, of course, is our first reading from Samuel, famous story of David and Goliath. David, the teenage boy, and Goliath, the invincible Philistine warrior. The book of Samuel says that Goliath stood more than 6 cubits tall. A cubit was 1.5 feet, which means that Goliath was more than 9 feet tall. And he was going up against David, the teenage boy, which is why King Saul tried to stop him from fighting. He said, "Don't fight the Philistine. You can't possibly win." And Saul was right. By all human reckoning, Saul was right. David didn't even have a chance, which is why the most important line in the entire first reading is when David says, "The battle belongs to the Lord." And by God's power, David does what is not possible and walks away triumphant. Same story here in the gospel. There's a man with a withered hand. The actual Greek word that Mark uses there is, it means that his hand was dried, which meant that it had been atrophied and decayed and unused for decades, and it was impossible by any method known under the heavens that he would ever be able to use that hand again. But by God's power, Jesus does what is impossible and cures him. Now, interestingly enough, he cures him on the Sabbath day. Why does he cure him on the Sabbath day? Make a big deal of curing him on the Sabbath day. See, every other time Jesus cures anybody, someone walks up to Jesus, asks to be cured. Jesus asks if they have any faith, and if they show faith, he cures them. Unless Jesus cures on a Sabbath. All four Gospels show that when Jesus cures on a Sabbath, he takes the initiative and walks up to the disabled person, and he offers them healing even before they ask. Why does he do that? Well, it's because, like he said yesterday, he's the Lord of the Sabbath. And one day, on a Sabbath, Jesus would cure all of us against all odds, against all appearances to the contrary. He would defeat the power of sin and evil, winning what appeared to be an impossible battle. Now, today, we commemorate what appears to be another impossible battle. Because on the 22nd day of January, for the past several years, every diocese in the country observes a day of prayer and penance for the legal protection of the unborn. That's why I'm wearing purple today. Purple is the color of prayer and penance. And just as an aside, I heard a really great phrase the other day. It referred to abortion as prenatal homicide. I love that. I'm going to say that every time now. Prenatal homicide. It's exactly what it is. It's a complete abomination. You know how people remember the slaveholders of the Old South? That's how they're going to remember this generation. They're going to say, "What the heck were they thinking? Prenatal homicide." And there's laws that protect all kinds of unborn everything. You know, there's laws, I just read this, there's laws on the books that say that if you disturb or break the egg of a bald eagle, it is punishable by fines of up to $20,000 and up to 5 years in jail for breaking the egg of a bald eagle. But prenatal homicide, no problem. And so we have a day of prayer, right? Day of prayer, and it seems ridiculously inadequate. Every lobby in the world and billions of dollars are out there promoting abortion, and we're having a day of prayer, and it seems like David going up against Goliath. And that's why we need to remember, you know, like David said there in the first reading, this battle belongs to the Lord, and God does not lose battles. We remember that human life is sacred. It's sacred because of its origin, God. It's sacred because of its destination, God. It's sacred because we come from God and we go back to God. If you could imagine, say some scenario in which someone had to choose between saving a poor old man and saving an animal. Maybe a house is burning down, something like that. Everybody would say, well, of course you saved the poor old man. Why does everybody say that? Because the life of the man has something that the life of the animal doesn't. It has a spark of the divine. This is a spiritual battle. It might be played out in a political arena, but it's a spiritual battle. We fight for minds and hearts. Because if we don't have minds and hearts, any political victory we win might be very short-lived. And remember, when we fight a spiritual battle, we're fighting on the Lord's own terms, and He can do what is impossible. That's why, above all else, what I want to offer you today is encouragement. Encouragement and perseverance. You know J.R.R. Tolkien, who wrote the Lord of the Rings books? He had a great quote once. He said, as a Christian, I don't expect history to be anything other than a long, slow defeat ending in final victory. That's what happens when you fight God's battles. It seems like a long, slow defeat ending in final victory, because this battle belongs to the Lord, and as we know, God does not lose battles. Amen.